You're listening to This Week with Ann Carrick and Vincent Caprio. It's what you're talking about this week.
Good evening and welcome to another show, This Week with Ann Carrick and Vincent Caprio. This is Ann Carrick. I'm in the studio and Vincent is on the telephone. And Vincent, you can hear us, right?
Certainly can, Ann. Thanks again.
Yeah, great to have technology helping us out today. Vincent had to be, can I say where you are?
Sure. I'm speaking at a conference in Chicago tomorrow morning at 8:30, a water conference.
So it was a little hard to be in Connecticut tonight until 8 and in Chicago at 8:30 in the morning. So he's calling in from Chicago. But it's not going to change our show at all because we have all sorts of great things lined up. We're going to talk first about the Tea Party and some of the effects it's having on the election. And then we're going to bring in a communications expert to talk about how the different candidates' communication styles affect voters when they head to the polls to vote. And that, of course, is coming up very soon. Last and certainly not least, we're going to get a little update on the housing market here in Connecticut as far as mortgages are concerned. So before we go to our first guest, Ed Lynch, I wanted to just remind people we've been talking about election-related things. Election Day, obviously November 2nd. If you need to register to vote, your time is running out. If you're registering by mail, if you're not already registered to vote, you have until October 19th, which is next Tuesday. It has to be 14 days in advance of the election. If you're doing it in person, you can do it 5 days in advance, which would be Tuesday, October 26th would be your cutoff. And if you're doing an absentee ballot, if you're not going to be around on Election Day for some reason, or you can't get to the polls, maybe you're volunteering for Election Day at a different location than where you vote, then you need to get that absentee ballot in time to get it back to your town clerk before the end of Election Day itself. You can also change your mind and pick up your ballot before 10 a.m. if you voted absentee and then you find out you are around and you want to go vote in person. All the forms for all those things are all online with the Secretary of the State's office. I put a link on our webpage for this week. And it's also, if you just go to sots.ct.gov, you will find it. So that's just a little elections heads up for everybody, because it's great to have an opinion who you want to vote for, but if you're not registered, you're not allowed to vote.
21 days from today. I can't wait.
You're counting. You have a big calendar. You're Xing off the days, Vincent.
Yes. This, to me, is it's my equivalent of my World Series. I love elections.
I thought you loved baseball, too.
I love baseball, too, but my friends know I'm just so consumed with talking about the elections and politics, so... 21 days, I can't wait. And for our listeners in Long Island, I just want to say the travesty of the state of New York not mailing ballots to people in the military is unbelievable. It's just an unbelievable story. I don't want to spend too much time on it, but
yeah,
New York State did not meet the deadline to mail out ballots to the people in Iraq and Afghanistan.
And that's really a shame. I mean, it's compounded by the fact that here are the people who are, you know, putting their lives on the line to defend our country and our freedoms, which includes the right to vote, and they're not even getting the chance.
No.
So enough said on that. I think we all agree that that's just a tragedy all around. So our first guest, Ed Lynch, professor of political science at Hollins University. And Ed, welcome to the show. How are you?
It's great to be back on with you. I'm doing very well this evening.
Good. And I know you and Vincent have talked before, so it's old home week here for all three of us.
And Professor, thanks for coming on with Carrick and Caprio.
Again, it's my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
And you know, in the last 2 years that we haven't spoken, because we were on previously during the 2008 cycle,
right.
I've been following you on Facebook, and I know you read some of my things. I just want to congratulate you on the book that you've written since then.
Well, thank you. Thank you. That is a book on George Allen, the former governor and senator from here in Virginia. And I am told by the publisher that I should be seeing that the end of this month. So I am very, very much looking forward to that.
We'll come back to that later about Senator Allen. So.
Sure.
Okay. You know, part of the reason that we asked you to be here, Ed, is, you know, that the Tea Party has gotten all sorts of coverage. It started as a political action group, and now it's almost viewed like a political party. Now, it's not really a separate party, but there have been a lot of primaries where a Tea Party candidate was up against somebody else who were under the same umbrella of the same party.
Right.
So we thought I know you follow all these things, and so we thought it would be fun to talk to you a little bit about that. Let's start with, you know, how did the Tea Party get to be so big so fast? You know, what started out as raising awareness about something, it seems like it's taken on a whole new life.
It sure has, and like Vince, this is my World Series. And by the way, I'd be remiss if I did not say, for the benefit of your listeners, congratulations to the New York Yankees on winning their series, and onward to the American League Pennant Series. And also, again, I'm sorry, the germ of being a political junkie runs very, very deep. I was actually up a good part of the night earlier this year watching the returns come in from England when they were having their election for Parliament. But to get back to the Tea Party, you know, the Tea Party is really an extraordinary political story. Whatever you think of their specific stands on issues, to think that about a year and a half ago, a number of pundits were, if they weren't writing off the Republican Party, they were saying that it's going to be moribund for some time. They had no say in the Senate, 60 votes, cloture-proof Senate, an overwhelming majority in the House of Representatives, at one time a very, very popular Democratic president. And yet, this grassroots movement with, at the beginning, certainly, no national leadership, no behind-the-scenes national leadership, no pretended national leadership, did rallies all over the country starting on April the 15th, Tax Day 2009, and they began as a curiosity, a news curiosity, and I can remember the news coverage. Oh, and look at this, all these people are down on the public square holding up signs, and they call themselves, get this, folks, the Tea Party Movement.
And they were carrying
tea bags. It's not an asterisk anymore. It's not a joke anymore.
Right. And it started, too, I think, where they wanted you to send a bag of tea to your congressman
That's
or your
right.
senator to, you know, show your unhappiness with how things were going. Is there any concern that, because it actually came out of part of the Republican Party, is there going to be any fracture of votes where they're splitting votes between Tea Party candidates and Republicans, or for the most part, is the Republican Party, you know, supporting any of the Tea Party candidates?
Well, I mean, yeah, there'll be some of that. There are rumors that, in fact, in a couple of congressional districts, the Democratic candidates may have put up so-called Tea Party candidates in Republican primaries to split the vote and get the Republican Party split. Look, I have known Republicans most of my life. The Republican Party has always had a moderate conservative split in it, going back to the days of Nelson Rockefeller and Barry Goldwater. Sometimes that warfare is out in the open. Sometimes it's behind the scenes. But you know what? Over the years, it has really benefited the Republican Party more when it's been out in the open. More people get involved in it. More people get interested in the debate. And the party as a whole benefits from it. Now, in the case of the Tea Party, it has knocked off some very prominent Republicans, Lisa Murkowski in Alaska. Of course, Mike Castle, a biggest upset of them all in Delaware. And that's the one that a lot of people will focus on because, you know, looking at the polls, and while there are 3 weeks to go, they're not favorable. It looks pretty certain that that Tea Party victory did cost the Republicans a seat in the United States Senate. Mike Castle would have been a shoe-in. Christine O'Donnell is way behind, better than she was, but still way behind. It could possibly mean the difference between the Republicans controlling the Senate and not.
But the Tea Party brought us Marco Rubio, who destroyed Governor Crist.
That's right, and Scott Brown,
right.
To start with. You know, and you know, overall, the effect of the Tea Party on Republican fortunes since 2009 has been overwhelmingly positive. As one commentator put it, to get their energy and their ideas and to get Republicans and conservatives and those who want constitutional government fired up to the extent that the Tea Party has, if the cost of all of that is one Senate seat in Delaware, this commentator said, I'll take it.
Right, and when you look at the fact that Mitch McConnell supported the mainstream Republican candidate in Tennessee, mm-hmm. and Rand Paul was the Tea Party candidate, who Rand Paul has an 8-point lead against the Democrat.
Right, and most of the candidates who are Tea Party candidates are well ahead, and you mentioned Rubio in Florida, who was supposed to, you know, have no more chance than Christine O'Donnell seems to have now, is. Gosh, in one poll up by 25 points, that's overstating it. It's probably more like 12, but that's a, you know, good solid victory over a very popular former governor.
And what about the fact that, you know, here in this area in New York, you know, Carl Paladino has been coming under a lot of fire recently for comments he made and very poorly timed, and in addition to questionable comments, you know, do candidates like that who were supported by the whole Tea Party movement, you know, is it one of those, the one bad apple spoiling the whole bunch, in the sense that they're going to say, oh my God, there's a bunch of crazy people? Or is it just like any one candidate who says or does something that, you know, everybody cringes, like, what are they thinking?
Oh, I mean, some people will use either Christine O'Donnell or Palladino, or maybe one or two of the others. But look, in my own humble opinion, I think Palladino's real error was going off of the economic script. He could have just as easily made very supportive statements about gays and lesbians. It would have been almost as big a mistake, because that's where people's interest is. That's certainly where the Tea Party got started. It
has
a share of social conservatives, but mostly these are people that started off complaining about spending, complaining about the bailouts, complaining that the economic recovery isn't happening. These are economic issues, and to go off of that script this year, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, is just not a good idea.
But candidly, I've never believed that Carl Palladino ever had a chance. I mean, don't forget, Spitzer won 70-30. Andrew Cuomo thought he was going to win 70-30. Mm-hmm. Actually, I know this sounds strange, but Carl Palladino now has more name recognition for saying these inflammatory statements than he did previously.
Hmm.
I mean, Carl Palladino never had a chance. If you look at the numbers of Democrats that are registered voters in the state of New York, let's not ever forget that, you know, Gore beat Bush in New York City by 800,000 votes in 2000.
Well, so it's a similar situation then to Christine O'Donnell, where it's not like it was a close race to start with.
Right. Well, no, I mean, Castle could have beaten me, but Palladino, it didn't matter who the Republicans would have nominated, Andrew Cuomo was going to destroy them. I mean, Andrew Cuomo's been running since the day Patterson became governor, so it's such a blue state that it's just...
But you would have said that about Massachusetts before also.
Massachusetts, see, I'm a devotee of the theory all politics are local. Let's not ever forget, Margaret Coakley was a terrible candidate. After she won the primary on December 7th, she didn't campaign for a month.
Right.
She went away at the end of December on a vacation. She thought she was winning 60-40, so she's a horrible candidate.
Because she thought she didn't have to do anything.
That has to do with, you know, the candidates involved. I mean, Sharon Engel is not that good of a candidate either. She said things that, but look, she's still close with Harry Reid, so... The professor can elaborate a little more on that.
Well, I think that again, you make the point that politics are local, and there are those candidates who are better than others on both sides of the aisle, and certainly in the Tea Party, better than others at expressing coherent thoughts and worthwhile thoughts on the issues that people are most concerned about. Now, what the Tea Party has done, and what the conservative wing of the Republican Party has done, is tried to offer an alternative. To do that, you have to be sort of negative to start with. You have to say, this isn't going to work, this isn't the way to go. It can look very negative, it can look like you're almost being obstructionist, but what you're doing is you're establishing a choice, you're establishing an alternative, and For most of their members, the alternative can actually be stated in very few words. We are for constitutional government. If it's not in the Constitution, the government should not be doing it. Or if they're really convinced that this is a great idea, maybe you like universal health care, then go ahead and pass a constitutional amendment. That's the way the founders set out to do it, and that's the rule you should follow. And the other thing that they're talking about most frequently, as I look at their rallies and I talk to people who are actually involved in the movement, is keep your promises. If you go to Washington promising to be a fiscal conservative, then dang it all, vote like a fiscal conservative once you get there. And that's I mean, the Tea Party, for all intents and purposes, really started back during the second term of George W. Bush, when Republicans started lambasting Republican congressmen and senators for spending too much money. Keep your promises. And this also goes, if I can just make one more point real quick, this also goes to the willingness of Republican primary voters to take a chance on somebody like Christine O'Donnell, who doesn't seem to have a very good chance in the general election at all, whereas Mike Castle would have been a shoo-in. Look, what the Tea Party is saying is, look, we'll take the risk. We'll take the risk even of losing the seat rather than pretending, from their point of view, pretending we have a Republican who isn't going to vote with us on really, really crucial issues, and that's why they abandoned Mike Castle.
So it was also a message then to existing, you know, elected officials and candidates that, you know, if you're not going to do what you say you're going to do, then we're not going to support you anymore.
That's exactly right. And we're willing to take the ultimate risk, which is to throw you out because you haven't kept your promises, even at the risk of getting somebody worse.
Right.
Maybe in the long term, you know, all politicians will learn a lesson from this, which would be, you know, listen to the folks back home.
Right, exactly.
What's interesting, and I know this is going to be anecdotal, but I as a student of politics, I decided to go to a few of people's homes that were Tea Party mm-hmm. members and to listen to a 3 or 4 hour dissertation. And I have to say, in the 3 times I went for 12 hours, all 3 of the homes I went to, the whole topic was on the deficit. The whole topic was balancing the budget. There was never one communication in anyone's home that I was ever at a Tea Party talking about social issues, which brings me to, I don't understand, the people on the left demonize people in the Tea Party, and I hear the word racist and Tea Party every day, but once again, I never heard anyone talk about any social issues when I went to these meetings.
Well, you know, there's an old saying, a racist is anyone who starts winning an argument against a liberal. The other side of that is a communist is anyone who starts winning an argument against a conservative. You know, it's almost a knee-jerk reaction among some in the, you know, sort of far left, the blogosphere left, not in the mainstream media, to equate almost any form of conservatism, almost any expression of conservatism with racism. But and, you know, the fact that the Tea Partiers have said some nasty things about President Obama and that President Obama is African-American, the first African-American, makes it very easy to draw that line, but that doesn't make that connection a correct one. It's an easy connection, but it's a false connection.
Right. You know, before we let you go, since I know that you have a lot of experience on the subject of terrorism, I know it's a little diversion from what we...
Can we restate that just bit there, Anne? Subject of studying terrorism.
Studying, I'm sorry. Not participating, studying.
Great, I'm now on the no-fly list.
You weren't planning any vacations, were you? No.
You might be on the enemies list. new enemies list.
That I'm okay with.
Oh, my.
Sorry
about that.
Ahead.
No, that's fine. I want to be clear of what I meant. The reason I was going to ask you is because we had the recent warning for travel in Europe for mm-hmm. Americans, which is sort of unusual. I don't recall in any time in recent history that we've been, you know, warned about traveling to Europe. So it's a two-part question. Thoughts or comments on that? And also, should we be looking at Europe? Are they sort of tracking ahead of us as far as what's happened in Europe with terrorist attacks and terrorism? You know, are they sort of something to look at? Like, if we don't get this under control, that we're going to follow in the same path they've already traveled?
Okay, well, those are two very good questions. The most recent warning that was given to Americans was a very, very odd one because there was almost nothing specific to it at all except, be more careful traveling to Europe. Well, golly, I can remember my parents telling me that when I was going to Spain in 1978. Be careful,
right. It's
Europe. Now, you know, having said that, Europe in 2010, confronting an enemy that professes radical Islam, I fear for Europe, particularly Western Europe, because I'm afraid they're just not psychologically or politically ready to stand up to an enemy like that. They'll be so concerned with political correctness that they will blur the lines between the Muslims who mean us no harm and who want to live in harmony with Christians and Jews, and those who do, and they'll end up, not doing anything about genuine enemies. Frankly, I would be wary about traveling to Europe, but that's been true for a while. There's nothing recent that leads me to that.
So nothing recently that would cause you extra concern?
Not extra concern, but I've been concerned about the European response to Islamic terrorism for years.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. But, related to this recent warning, nothing
no.
that, yeah, okay.
No.
I was just curious, because I know a lot of times you hear about things, how Europe has been the target of terrorist attacks for a much longer period of time than the United States as far as attacks on their own soil, in their own
right.
country. Our embassies in other places have been attacked, but, with the exception of 2001, we didn't have a lot of attacks that were here on our own ground.
Right, right. Well, the most serious ones, one in London and one in Madrid, were on transportation systems and in Spain in particular in 2003, it just had it forced that country or prompted that country into a 180 degree turn in the way that they deal with terrorism, and unfortunately, and I hope I'm wrong about this, a way that is likely to invite more attacks.
All right, and on that happy note...
But I just want to say one last thing, Professor.
Sure.
I was wrong about the phenomena of Sarah Palin. After the election, I told you that she was going to be a trivia question, like Henry Cabot Lodge as VP for Nixon and William Miller for Goldwater. I thought she would be relegated to a trivia question that only insiders like us would know. I was wrong. You were correct about the phenomena of Sarah Palin. I missed that one all the way.
Well, we don't know where it's headed from here, but certainly she has had a brilliant media strategy since 2008, keeping herself in the news, the timing of when her book was released, the public statements that she has made. Who knows where we go from here and what things might look like 2 years from now, but Sarah Palin has taken the opportunity that she got in 2008 and made more than the most of it.
Yeah, I don't think she's somebody we're going to forget soon. And we're going to talk about her with, our next guest, because we're going to be talking about communication styles of candidates and even those who are non-candidates at the moment and how they're perceived. So she was on my list to ask about because we don't know what she's going to do, but I don't think she's going away for sure.
Well, she just had a meeting with a lot of very prominent conservative leaders in Florida. This was sponsored by Newsmax, a conservative journal. That is widely interpreted as a very, very strong sign that she's thinking seriously of running for president.
Okay.
So, in the House, 45 or 50 GOP seats pickup?
Oh, I think that's probably reasonable. I don't know that the Republicans can get all 10 Senate seats that they
only need. 7 or 8. I say
yeah.
51 Democrat, 49 Republican.
Yeah, I think that's probably about right. We're in a good position to watch some of this here in Virginia. We have 4 House seats up. We don't have a senator up this time, but we have 4 House seats up. That's 1/10 of what the Republicans need to pick up the House, and at the moment it looks like 3 out of the 4 are probably going to go Republican. The 4th one may yet, but it doesn't look like it. If the election were held today, it would not.
All right, well, we'll find out soon because elections are not that far away.
3 weeks.
I know.
3 weeks from today.
Exactly.
And we're going to have the professor back after the election to talk about what happened.
All right.
And, sounds good to me.
And maybe we'll even find out what he's doing on election night. But that's a whole other story. So, Ed Lynch, always a pleasure to have you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks,
Vince,
Professor.
Good to talk to you again. And best of luck with this new venture of yours. And please get back with me when you need me.
All right. Thank you very much. Ed Lynch from Hollins University. We're going to take a quick break.